Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven.
Hello, pod crew. I had a lovely guest lined up and unfortunately they've not turned up, so I hope that everything's okay. However, I did have a little something that I wanted to discuss with you, and some of it you might know, other things you might not. But I thought I'd go over it anyway. I wanted to talk today about hormones, like canine hormones, about seasons, maturity, spaying, neutering, all of that kind of stuff, and how you may have been misled a little along the way, or things that maybe you've just not considered. So let's start with my mistakes. I think I've mentioned before that with Merlin, my flat coat retriever, I got him neutered about 8 months, and he'd got to that point where he was full of hormones. He was an absolute handful. He was doing my absolute head in, and I just thought, you know what, let's have him off and that'll sort everything out, which really common thing. Loads of people have this thought, and yeah, you know, I did it as well. Did it cure everything? No. Did I look back and regret it? Yes, I did. Do I regret having him neutered? No. I don't regret having him neutered, just more the age of when I had it done. I had Bella. I know I've done a recording about Bella before. This was the Rottie mix that I had to have put to sleep for behavioural reasons. On the advice of a behaviourist, I had her done at about age 2. Ish. So not really young, you know, not a baby. And it actually made her behaviour worse once the hormones had settled down, and not better. Now, for some dogs, it does improve things a little bit. But in my view and my experience, I'd say that's more to do with the dog maturing rather than the lack of hormones. But yeah, that's a whole other discussion, which we may come on to. We will see. Fern, which was a black and tan mini long-haired Dachshund. There is another episode on Fern. It's one of the really early ones, I think. And she was a barky little mare, basically. And once I realised, you know, I wasn't going to be able to breed from her, as in, you know, from a behavioural perspective, I didn't want barky puppies out of a barky mum, which was what would have happened. And I realised that with the endless cycle of hormones with each season, that wasn't helping her behaviour. She needed to be more on an even keel and more settled. So I got her spayed at 2.5. She actually developed a mammary tumour within 6 months of her being spayed, which is not what you'd expect once the hormones have gone, but she did. I can't put that down to spaying as such, but just a random fact for you that did develop. And I'm trying to think who else have I done. I've yet, and hopefully never will, get Moss done. He is 13 and a half, another mini long. He has been a stud dog in the past. I currently have a Labrador in season, so that's a lot of management at the minute, because he no longer thinks he's 13 and a half. He thinks he is in his prime and trying his best, despite the size difference. But I help to keep him entire. I don't plan on using him, but I don't really want to put him under at 13 and a half for something that isn't needed, because he's happy and healthy otherwise, and it's just down to me to manage other bitches' seasons and him when they come along. I did get Ripple done, which is Moss's daughter, Mizzle's mum, and I got her done a couple of years ago now. Was it a couple of years ago? Yeah. So I think she was about 5 at the time. And I didn't plan on getting her done. That wasn't part of what I was thinking. While she's had 2 litters and that was her done, I wasn't planning on breeding from her again. I was just wanting to let her stay entire and the hormones just kind of run their course. Keeping an eye out for things like pyometra. When I say pyometra, I mean womb infections, which can be deadly. And the older that bitches get and the more seasons that they have, the more likely they are to develop a pyometra, which is quite hard to detect. But I was willing to kind of keep an eye. I'm always checking my dogs over. So I would have rather her had a life with her hormones than a life without. However, not long after she had Mizzle and the rest of that litter, she came into season earlier than expected, but it is quite common for bitches to come in season earlier than they normally would in their normal cycle after they've had a litter. But I'd even say that when Ripple came into season, it was earlier than that. And she had a season and she ended up with a urinary tract infection. So I was like, okay, off we go to the vets. And you know, antibiotics, and that cleared it up. And then after about a month of her being out of season, Moss was going crazy over her again. I wondered whether it was pyo. I think she ended up with another UTI. Took her to the vets and they said it's a silent season. So this means that it's a season as in the hormones are there, but there isn't the visible discharge, the swelling, all the things that you'd expect. And the only real way to tell when they're out of season is by the entire male that I had at home, which was Moss, as in when his behaviour changed. And then she ended up with a phantom. I think, I can't remember which way around it is, if I'm honest. She ended up having another real season, basically, not long after. And then she ended up having a phantom pregnancy, which is quite common for Daxies with phantoms. It's kind of, they're not like the bitches that I've had that have been entire. I wouldn't say any of them have been serious phantoms, but they're milk and, yeah, mainly just holding milk. No serious behaviour changes, no guarding toys, things like that. And just upping the exercise and just lessening the food a little bit and adding things like supplements of raspberry leaf tablets has always helped. So because she'd had these three seasons in very quick succession, which is not normal, after a discussion with my vet, we were like, okay, we're going to get spayed because she is now becoming like really high risk for pyometra with all these hormones going all over the place. And this isn't normal. And I'll be honest, I didn't really want to get her done, as in there is a side effect when you've got long coated or double coated dogs, then spaying them or neutering them massively affects their coat quality. You know, they can go really fluffy, if you know what that kind of undercoat, like the under fluffy woolly stuff, that kind of goes on overdrive and you end up with more of that than that glossy outer guard coat. And not only is it just not as pretty, which, you know, is by the by, but we all like to look at our pretty dogs, of course, it's more, it becomes really hard to manage when they're getting muddy and they're more likely to get matted quickly. Some of it might need hand stripping out and it just becomes a whole thing. Now, if you've got a breed, for example, say a Cocker Spaniel, and you're having it clipped at the groomers or you're clipping them yourselves, you don't see this because it's clipped off and it makes no odds. And if you've had a clipped dog, that fluffy stuff as it starts to grow out, it was spayed or not, is the kind of coat that I'm talking about post-spay or post-neutering. When if you let that get out of hand, I'm sure you can imagine that it'd be a bit of a nightmare. And Ripple, because we had all these seasons ongoing, we didn't know whether her body would then trigger her going back into another season. And I had to go and get, I can't remember off the top of my head the name of the drug now, basically medication to ensure that she came out of this phantom pregnancy, got rid of the milk. And then within a number of weeks after that, she had to be booked in to be spayed so we could guarantee that she wasn't in a phantom. She went and, you know, she had these meds, she went and got spayed, all is well. And luckily, yes, she has got some of this woolly fur. I've kept on top of it and her coat is actually pretty good considering. And it could be a lot worse. When I got Fern done, with her being a black and tan, she had a beautiful, quite a short for a long coat, but quite a compact coat. Really easy to manage, glossy, just the best coat to manage for such a short little dog. You know, obviously they walk outside and they just absorb mud because they are not far off the ground or any kind of water. And she was so easy to manage before I spayed her. And then when I spayed her, it was the undercoat started going through, and if I was to leave her and not like strip her and essentially pull it out, which isn't pleasant, she would just look like a silver dog. And it just, as I say, this kind of stuff just mats in seconds. It's not nice. It's not that you could just leave it and expect it or brush it through every day and it'd be okay. Because it's so much finer and like it has like a almost like a crimp to it, so it's more likely to keep getting matted. So yeah. With Fern, it was a nightmare. I'm still sitting on the fence as to what to do with Mizzle because she's another black and tan as well, and I really don't want to have to put her through what I did with Fern. I mean, Fern's behaviour was better, never great, but better after being spayed. Taking away the hormones and not having that cycle up and down all the time definitely helped. With Mizzle, it's more a case of just to make my life easier, as in she's not going to be bred from. Unfortunately, she has got a grade 2 heart murmur, so I won't be breeding from her. I don't know. I don't really want to, at the minute, I'm just kind of thinking, nah, I'm just going to deal with her seasons and manage things with Moss. Yeah, don't know. So they're the ones that come to mind. I've had others. I mean, Ziggy was, yeah, random story for you. Ziggy, which was my previous old Dachshund, lived to just shy of 17. Zig the Pig or Piglet, he had a number of names, not related to my current guys, but, you know, he was the dog that I got at 18 and lived with Bella. And he died in 2022. And I'd got him with the aim of breeding him to Jazz because I wanted Ziggy puppies. I think I've said this before. Jazz is Moss's mum. So, and I tried and tried and tried. And Ziggy would try, but never quite locate the hole. And to the point where I sent both Ziggy and Jazz to an experienced Dachshund breeder and said, look, I will pay you a stud fee if you can get my two dogs to mate. And they couldn't. They tried. And I ended up using one of their dogs on Jazz instead. So, after that, after she, Jazz, got pregnant, I thought, well, there's no point in keeping Ziggy entire. And I got him done when he was about four and a half, just to make my life easier at that point, because I'd got, obviously, Jazz in, who, you know, was entire. And, I mean, you know, I've said before, thank God he never actually did reproduce, because the amount of health issues he developed as he got older were quite obviously genetic, and I would have passed that on. So that was obviously meant to be. Which worked out for the best anyway, as in not producing unhealthy puppies out of Ziggy. He was the best dog, bless him, he really was. And he still, you know, was an absolute trooper with his health problems. Yeah. But randomly, considering that he could never locate the hole, and then he got neutered, I think he was about 8 or 9, so this is about the point when I got a very young Fern and she was in season, but obviously I wasn't really that worried about Ziggy being around her when she was in season because he'd not. His balls were gone. Yet I found the pair of them tied, like properly in their mating and tied for a good 20 odd minutes, even though he had no balls. Yeah, it does happen. I've heard of others talk about it. It's not commonplace. And obviously, you know, she wasn't going to get pregnant from that because there's nothing produced. But it was annoying at the same time of all those times I tried to get him to mate to Jazz and he wouldn't, and no matter how much you tried to help the pair of them, which you quite often have to do with Dachshunds, because of their body shapes and things like that, he wasn't having any of it. But he managed to do it unattended with Fern. Dogs, eh? Yeah, so they're the ones that come into mind that I've had spayed and neutered. So the things that I'd say to keep in mind, if you have a young male, if you have, say, a Labrador, that kind of size, like a large dog, Labrador, Shepherd, something like that, then their hormones are going to peak at around 10 months. That's when, you know, they're a nightmare. They can't listen. They might be humping lots of things and you and other people or cushions, or they might just be overt in their behavior, as in overly excitable, not being able to listen, want to go and do what they want. It's not always about the humping. And so for smaller dogs, it might be, you know, say six, eight months, depending on how small. And if they're larger dogs like giant breeds, they might be like 12, 14 months before those testosterone really peaks. And then it starts to kind of just die down a little bit as they mature. But that's the most testing stage. And that's where a lot of people will go, okay, I'm going to get them neutered now. Now, the fallout from that, there's two sides for me. The fallout from that, behaviourally, is essentially their brain needs the hormones to finish maturing. So by spaying or neutering at a very young age, essentially what we're looking at is, in human terms, it'd be like giving a vasectomy to a 14-year-old boy who's like, that testosterone's like pumping. You wouldn't do it. And the hormones help the brain to mature, never mind the body. So just keep that in mind when you are kind of almost throwing in the towel with your young adolescent frustrating male, that at that age, if we start to take away the hormones, that we're almost mentally locking them into being younger, which doesn't always go in your favour. The other side of it is, especially for males, the hormones tell the growth plates. So they're still growing at a very slow rate at this age, but they are still maturing and their bones and joints are still fusing. So if we take away the hormones while the growth plates are still there, the hormones tell the growth plates when to stop. So if you take away the hormones, There is nothing to tell the growth plates to stop growing. And this actually happened with Merlin. He was 8 months. He was a good 2 to 3 inches above the breed standard. He was a big lad and he was very leggy. Now looking at, you know, his family members, as in, you know, littermates, mother, father, all of that kind of stuff. None of them were as tall. None of them were as leggy. And that's because these growth plates carried on going because I took the hormones away too soon. You know, you live and learn. I'm not beating myself up over this. I know that I know better now. I just didn't at the time. That's just the way it is. So you end up with a very leggy dog, which the other side of that as well is it can actually, especially for these larger breeds, retrievers, goldies, definitely, I know there's been studies done for goldies and Rottweilers, that getting them done while they're still in this maturing phase physically can actually really encourage, really increase the likelihood of them developing osteoporosis, you know, brittle bones and joint issues. And when you've got a big dog, well, we've got any dog, but when you've got a big dog, the last thing you want is hip and elbow and joint problems, because that's going to greatly inhibit the quality of life. Now, vets, as a general rule, seem to be getting better with advising maybe 18 months, depending on the breed, maybe 18 months. If you're going to get them neutered or spayed, then get them done around that time, or 12 months to 2 years, depending, which is a lot better advice than the what used to be, right, 6 months, let's get them done. Yeah. The other, if we look at bitches or girls with seasons, a lot of people don't want the hassle of seasons, and I understand that. It's not, you know, it's not pleasurable. Some bitches are cleaner than others with, you know, whether you put like doggy period pants on them to help keep your house free from blood. I mean, Ada's in her second season now, Labrador, so, you know, a lot bigger than the Daxies. We've seen a couple of spots of blood, but that's it. Like, and we're, well, a week maybe, don't know. So, but a couple of spots of blood over that time. So not massive. She's keeping herself clean for the most part. I think it's literally when she's just fallen asleep and she's, you know, lying on a bed or on the floor and she hasn't cleaned herself up enough. That's just the way it is. I can deal with that. The management around other dogs can be frustrating, especially if you've got entire males in the house. I mean, even the Daxie girls, they're both trying to hump her, because then it becomes like a competition almost with who's got the most breeding rights and things like that. When naturally Ripple is kind of the more, don't kill me for this statement because I do have reasons for saying this, there is a hierarchy between dogs. So not that we have to make a point of being the boss of dogs. Those of you who've known me for a while know, you know, this isn't, but I always have to kind of say it like that. But Ripple's top dog, however, as in, yeah, she is. She's top dog. I was going to say at least within the bitches, but she's not. It's literally top dog. But she's been spayed, which gives her less. She's got no breeding rights now, which means she has to like make more of a point of it. And because I've took that away from her. And so she has to. So she's been like humping Ada and all of that. So it's like, it's not fun to be coping with. But I just think, ah, well, it's once every 6 months. If you're lucky, it's once every 10 months, because some bitches will only come in that often. But my best advice would be the vets always try and do a spay, or they should be trying to do a spay between 10 and 12 weeks after they've finished a season. So it's midway point, as much as we can, you know, think it is. It's midway point between two seasons. That means there's no inflammation and there's little to no chance of there being phantom pregnancy. We'll come back to that in a second. Or, you know, the hormones should be as settled as they should be, because you are the midway point between seasons. So a lot of vets currently will advise, oh, we'll do it after 10 to 12 weeks of your first season, which for some bitches could be as early as, say, 8 or 9 months, depending on how early they've been in season. So my best advice would be, if you want to get them done younger, you know, not that young, but young, on the younger end of the scale, wait for them to have two seasons, because then you can time it. Do they go 6 months between seasons? Do they go 8 months between seasons? And then you can more accurately plot that midway point between seasons. If they're not a 6 month bitch and they're an 8 month bitch, then you'll want to do that spay 16 weeks after that season for the best possible chance. When we talk about phantoms and things like that, it is really imperative that a bitch isn't put under and spayed in whatever, there's lots of different methods, lots of different ways. Maybe it's something that I need to get Lil on at some point to talk about, because I know that she's done loads of research into the different ways of spaying and neutering and things like that, which, you know, I'm pretty au fait on, but it's always good to have discussions with someone else for that one. So I'm not going to go into that side today. But getting them spayed while there is milk or while there is hormones present, you know, any kind of inflammation in the womb, things like that, can actually change the dog's brain chemistry permanently once they've been spayed. So you can end up with a dog who is highly reactive, more than, you know, normal, or more sensitive, because the hormones have kind of been locked to where they were. And then they can also smell to other dogs post-spay, smell like they like they're in season, or smell like they are pregnant. So they could always be being bothered by other dogs. I suspect that Mika, which was my Springer, I didn't really have a say on when she was spayed, because she wasn't properly mine really at that point. And she was one of those dogs that would attract attention from every male dog, and she must have just smelt like she was always in season. She was very good at telling them off and just ignoring them. She really wasn't bothered by other dogs. You know, she wasn't one to go and attract attention. She wasn't one that would go, yes, let's play. It was just, give me my ball and where are we going? She was great in that way, but I do think that she was spayed at the wrong point in her season. She just smelt really good to other dogs, what can I say? But for the ones that, you know, end up getting done at the wrong point, and that where their brain chemistry changes and they're locked into fear or whatever it may be, there is no real helping. Like, there is management, but there is no medications or at least hormone replacement that we can give them to take them back to how they used to be. Once it's done, and it can be quite scary. So they're all things to keep in mind, and I know a lot of vets now are becoming better at doing, right, okay, let's get them in for a pre-spay check, you know, a couple of weeks before or whatever, just to check whether they've got milk or not. The other thing to remember, especially with a entire bitch, is that if they, so for 9 weeks after their season, whether or not they've been mated, whether or not they are pregnant, they will smell, they will give off a pheromone, they will smell to other dogs as if they are pregnant. And I would expect to see slight behaviour changes during this time. Because, like, for people, for human women, that never-ending cycle of hormones is not fun, and it does affect our behaviour, and it's the same with the dogs, so just try and be a little bit careful. So, and that's another reason why vets won't spay them pre-10 weeks after, because obviously within those 9 weeks, they smell like they're pregnant to other dogs. They emit the same pheromones. So there's lots to consider, and I think the other thing that we need to keep in mind is when dogs, adolescent dogs, are maturing, the old term used to be called a second fear period, and I know I've referred to it as that because that's just habit for me, but it's the dog starts to figure out what's useful information and what's not, what's safe and what's not, and they go through a very short period, could be a couple of weeks, could not even be that long, where they may spook at things that they've been fine with, like their bin lorry and things like that. And if something negative happens during this time to spook them more, then you may end up with a dog that has then learnt, yes, this is useful information and that is not safe, and it sticks with them for life. We add hormones and removing hormones into that, and it just complicates matters. So just keep that in mind. I mean, for example, if we go to like the Labrador Shepherd kind of size, as a general rule, that's about 10 months, about when the hormones are peaking for males. So they could, you know, even within that those breeds, it could be earlier, it could be later. I'm just going on a very generic average, but things to look for. So of course, yes, spaying and neutering does help prevent things like certain cancers, but there are risks of getting them done as much as prevention. You know, research what's common for your breed or mix of breeds. I know for Daxies, the Dash and Breed Council have done a study that basically says that no matter what the age you get them done, you're increasing their chance of IVDD or back problems. We all know that Daxies can get back problems. No matter what age you get them done, it will increase their chances. However, getting them done at 2 and over is less chance of under two but it will always increase their risk. So, and there are, you know, breeds I've mentioned before about Goldies and Rottweilers. There are studies, there are papers that have been done about spaying and neutering and osteoporosis and the massive link there and how it massively increases their chances of developing it. So again, just look into it for your breed. There might be specific ages where they've managed to knuckle down and go, okay, after this age, yes, it's still a risk, but it's a lower risk. You know, make an educated, informed decision rather than going with the, I want my dog spayed or neutered and I'm going to do it at a young age just to make my life easier. If I could have a mixed household and keep them, you know, I can manage them, then I will do it. I'm one of those that is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think Rip's probably the proof of that one for me, because we are messing with them. Yes, I'm all for making life easier, but at the cost of them, that's not quite right. But I'm not against spaying and neutering. Just make an informed decision, do your research. Don't just ask the vet, you know, ask your breed society, speak to the breeder. Just because you're keeping a dog entire doesn't mean you're going to be breeding from it. You know, I mean, Miz is still entire. And while I kind of keep playing with the idea of getting a spayed, I don't think I'll get it done. She's never going to be bred from, but if she spent the rest of her life entire, I'm all right with that too. Just because a dog is left unneutered or unspayed does not mean they have to be bred from. It's just about being responsible and keeping them away from male dogs when they're in season. I get for some people, especially if you use like daycare for your dogs and things like that, then of course male dogs, I think they need to be, there is some ruling about an age that they have to be neutered or they can't go, which I understand from a management perspective, like from a business perspective, I understand that. But if they've got bit, like if a male dog is attacking other males and it's only other entire males and they have a real issue and it's really, you know, affecting your lifestyle and where you can take them, then I get that. I totally get that, because that is going to help you both have a better life. And if the dog is what I call oversexed, so humping everything, not just at that peak point, I mean like onwards from there, you know, the dog's 2, 3, 4 years old and still humping anyone and everything, then fair enough. The dog is oversexed and removing the hormones will help, but it's also fully grown at that point. It may not cure the problem because it could just be a practiced habit, and humping isn't always about sexual behaviours. It could just be over arousal. And when I mean over arousal, I mean overexcited. Doesn't know how to expend that energy, and barking and doing circles and the rest of it isn't working, but what makes them feel better is humping something. A lot of dogs will resort to humping for that. It's not just about sexual gratification. Now, one thing that I have as well found with humpy males is if, yeah, humpy entire males, if they constantly have something like the cushion, the teddy bear, the soft bed, whatever their item is that they like to be amorous with, let's say, the more it becomes a cycle for them, the more they feel they need to do it. So by removing these offending items, cushions and things like that, and not letting them just have unrestricted access to it, should actually help the behaviour. Yes, part of that is you're managing it, but because you're breaking that cycle, the testosterone isn't constantly peaking and seeking more peaks, if that makes sense. Removing the ability to keep practicing it on their favourite things will help that testosterone subside a little bit and help just make everything else a lot more manageable. Giving them something... So I am all for breeds and whatever, having outlets for their natural instincts. I'm, though, all for you letting your humpy dog have an outlet for that activity, because it will not help anything. One thing I did notice with Moss many, many years ago was he, when he was a stud dog, for the 4 months after he'd had a mating, his behaviour would be different. Just be a bit more about him. There'd be a little bit of an edge. Not with me, but around other dogs. He'd be more likely to kind of go, oi, and tell him off a little bit. Nothing major, not aggression, but just a bit more of the big I am, and I'm not going to take any crap from anyone, because of that testosterone peak, and it takes 4 months for that to kind of subside. So, and you know, that's the same if it's the cushion or if it's, you know, an actual female dog. So yeah, keep that in mind. And once we do get them, or once you do get them spayed or neutered, depending, if it's a procedure where the hormones are being removed, because not all of them do involve that, but most generic vets you know, that's what they do. They take the womb and the ovaries out, or they take the balls off. You know, that's the bog standard spay and neuter. It'll take about 12 weeks for all the hormones to subside, which means that if you've got, say, a young female puppy and you've put your older entire male dog in for spay, in for neutering before the young bitch comes in season, make sure it's pretty early, because your male dog could still reproduce for 12 weeks, potentially for 12 weeks after they've got no balls. Just keep that in mind. But yeah, I think that's probably enough information for you today. And I will leave it there. Hopefully I will hear from what was meant to be my guest today. And I am trying to book some more guests in. I'll be honest, with the pod, I'm determined to get to episode 50, which is, I think, around June time. It should be about a year. And then I'm going to see. I don't know. Life's changed a lot. I'm enjoying it. But it's also that weekly cycle. So I don't know whether I just look at doing it, say, fortnightly, or whether I, you know, knock it on the head. I don't know. What would help is anyone who listens, please do comment, whether on Spotify or whatever. Send me a message. What do you enjoy? What are the best episodes? I know the last couple of them have probably not been so great. I've been trying to get them out in a rush. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to be shove anything out so you get your weekly stuff. I want to put quality stuff out, but I'm not sure I have all the time to be able to dedicate to it at the minute. So I don't know whether I take a break. I don't know. But tell me what your favourite episodes are, what you've got out of it, and I'll see if I can kind of more pinpoint it down that those kind of roads. Yeah, I'm just thinking aloud here. I love you guys listening. I love doing it, but I want to make sure it's the best it can be. And if that means it needs to be less often, then so be it. You know, that's kind of where I'm thinking at the minute. But anyway, I will be back next week. I am determined to do weekly up until episode 50. And have a great week, and I will speak to you all soon. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog-owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.